the soft coal and get the hard coal going by the project. We got sailing.
Well, the door locked.
We're trapped. We're safe. Took right along. We sailed around Manhattan, Statue of Liberty, and all in the mirror, the cruise ship came in. We sailed up alongside and saluted it. You should have seen the bridge.
Well, Michael's joining us in a second. Michael is the membership chairman for the Connecticut Technology Council, which represents about 400 Connecticut-based companies, many of them, the majority of them involving software and hardware development for, you know, IT, computers, information, etc. But there's also a section that's growing within the group, which has to do with engineering, etc. So one of the reasons we wanted to do this is to try to drive bring more batteries, motors, electronics, etc. I'm sure many of you have already been on the website that we created for this thing. And there's, since you know a little bit of the politics involved and the whole long history of the environmental movement, and since 1970 with Earth Day, you know, there's been pressure on the part of the citizenry to try to do away with oil and find alternatives to gasoline and burning fossil fuels. What's holding this back is the efficiency of the motors and the batteries, especially in the automobile industry, to bring this about. I've been with Electrifying Times, which is the magazine that you probably know me from, for since 1993 now. And what we've discovered after digging and hunting and is that there's a lot of technology which just gets developed by universities, by colleges, by labs. Even if you read the New York Times, they have a special patent section, and they make a big hoopla about it, and then 6 months down the line, you don't hear anything about it anymore. And I thought that if we could bring about some kind of concerted effort whereby a group of people would finally start to put all this together in a concise way and not lose track of the vision as to why we're doing it for, that we might actually be able to bring about some positive change. In NOAA, for example, we have the largest collector clipping service of electrical information for batteries and motors, except they're totally in the pocket of the Lead Acid Association, and their job is to really collect this stuff and sell it for, you know, $2,500 a report, and it sort of languishes there on the library shelf in some corporate library somewhere, and there's really no momentum, there's no incentive. It's not like somebody's going to read this and say, oh, this is great, let's take it to the next step. A good example of this is, for example, Amory Lovin, which is the head of the Rocky Mountain Institute, and he went about and collected a lot of information for his hypercar, and he's a very patriotic guy. He really was honest in thinking that General Motors or Ford would embrace his vision, and the big three in Detroit, he didn't really want to deal with the Japanese or the Chinese, and he made, you know, his report, he sold his report for $17,000. He sold, I think, about 30 or 40 of them to all the major automobile manufacturers. And what's happened? Is there a hypercar on the road today?
No. Not going to be.
Are they really starting to use lighter materials in the manufacture of automobiles? Very little. But the change in the last few years that is giving us now the opportunity to actually do something positive is the economic motor that is motivating improvement of efficiency in battery technology. I know I'm losing the less techie bunch, but bear with me here. It's the cell phone market.
Yeah.
Laptops, cell phones, any portable device today, you know, you want to run those things all the time. People are out there on the train with their PDAs or with their Blackberries, only bung, 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 bung. And you don't want these things to last 3 hours and peter out. You want them to last, you know, 8 hours, 24 hours, 48 hours. So there's suddenly, aside from the automobile industry, which pretty much controlled the way battery technology was evolving and the economics and the market for these devices, is now being driven by a totally new economic model. And it's enabling us in the industry to start to make decisions that is, we can honestly think that because the company is now driving it like Sanyo, like Samsung, etc., are Japanese companies that have no investment in oil. There is no oil in Japan. The reason we went to war the first time around in Kuwait is actually not to protect our oil reserves, but to make sure that oil was being delivered to Tokyo and the Japanese island. Because in Japan, for example, the Prius, which you get a lot around here, was on the road for 3 years before it ever landed on the California shore. There is many EVs and hybrids in Japan that have never been imported into this country. There is an incentive over there because they don't have the resources, so they're going with nuclear power, and they're trying to develop better mousetraps. A lot of the research and development, the technology in general, is done in U.S. universities, which is why when you go to Yale, a good percentage now of the students are Asian, or they come from abroad, they study, they take what they have, and they take it back home. The bulk of the battery innovation and manufacture right now is in China. It's outside Shanghai. There was a company here in Connecticut, which was called Evercell, that made a nickel zinc battery, which was very innovative. It wasn't as expensive as nickel metal hydride. It was a little bit more money than lead acid. It fit right into what you needed to basically use for like two wheelers or for golf carts, etc. They were based in Danbury. They could have been making them in Danbury. Mm. They're all gone. They closed shop. They shipped everything over to Shanghai. So we've basically given away innovation that is going to enable super light components, that is going to enable soldiers in the field to go, you know, marching for like 2 days without having to think about their battery parts being recharged. Mm. And we've given it to foreign countries. Mm. And there is now a realization on the part of Senator Dodd, on the part of many defense interests in the state. They had about 2 or 3 months ago a conference that was held at the NOAA Community College, where they tried to bring together all the military procurement from the Navy, from the Air Force, from the Army, and try to rein in this leaking of technology and try to reestablish manufacturing in Connecticut for the high-end innovative components. This can be batteries and motors. There are two major factors in each field. The majority of motors that are being developed today are all plastic. But General Electric, which is the major manufacturer of electric motors, which are used in all the locomotives, GM actually makes the locomotives for Amtrak, etc., but they're General Electric motors. They're still copper wound. General Electric just got into the windmill business to compete with Norway and Denmark and Sweden, which now have big manufacturing in windmill power. These motors are actually the exact same motors that are in the locomotive that they're putting 300 feet up in the air. They haven't changed any of the technology. It's still the same old motor. It's heavy, it's bulky, it's metal, etc. I worked a lot in fashion. I worked a lot in textile. And the evolution of textile right now is that we have electrically conductive fibers, which are more electrically conductive than copper, meaning that we can make motors that are wound by, you know, polymer fibers that are going to be more effective, that are going to be lighter than anything that you have in any of your devices today. An electric car, even if it's not electric, even if it's not hybrid, has about 30 electric motors in it, for the window, for the windshield, for this, for that, for the other thing. Every time you put a copper wound around these things, you add weight. There's like literally 100, 200, 300 pounds worth of electric motors in an automobile, which is what Amy Lovins is talking about with his hypercar. It says you reduce the weight, you reduce the amount of gasoline or fuel that you need to power the car. The same with batteries. There was recently, and I posted it on the site, an interview with the folks at MIT that are involved with the engineering of better batteries. And all the money has been invested because Bush said hydrogen and said fuel cells, so everybody went and put all their money into hydrogen and fuel cells, which is fine. It has its application. But that's been to the detriment of improving battery technology. And we now, there's the same physics involved in storing more and more and more data on a computer chip or on a hard drive, which are all electrons. Mm. It's the same technology that you would use to make a better battery, a better solid state battery. And the research has been made, there's a lot of proof of concept, it's lying in research and development, it's lying in labs, it's lying in university shelves, etc. There needs to be concerted effort to bring all this about. One of the reasons I thought about contacting Ed and bring him in here is hopefully to try to get some of the native casino earnings to start to look at possible investment opportunities into all these new technologies. Mm. The Foxwoods, if you recall, a few years back, had opened up a shipping company, and they started making high-speed fares. Yeah. They built four of them, and the idea was to be able to shuttle high rollers between the Foxwoods and Manhattan. Mm. And then I guess Donald Trump and interest in Atlantic City didn't want to have these high-speed ferries land on Manhattan Island. So the whole purpose was defeated. And instead of pursuing the idea of developing a better ferry, so whatever market there are for ferries out there in the Mediterranean and the Bahamas, wherever, they just shut the plant. And they had 110 guys from electric boats that actually gone to an electric boat to work on these ferries that were back on the dock. And Skip Hayward was one of the major driving forces behind building the Foxwoods and building this facility here. Is now sort of huddling and in despair. We're trying to bring him out of his hole so that we can have a dialogue with him, because either we can't sort of rekindle the momentum and the energy and that he had when all this started back in '92. So it's a patch-up job.
And do they still have any of those left?
There's one left at anchored in New London. It's out on the harbor. I think that's the last one that they have sold.
It's up there right along. I see it every day.
Is it for sale? Do you know?
I don't know. It says Fox Navigation on it. It looks like it's doing 60 miles an hour standing still. Really a stunning profile.
We're looking for a river craft to help our global expansion of our river thing.
Yeah, but I don't think these things are particularly fuel efficient. They're made to go very, very fast on water. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're going faster but more efficiently than previously. It's a hydrofoil. It lifts up out of the water on wings.
So is someone I can contact them on?
There's the website. I'll send you the link, which is a great site for the Pequot River River Shipworks.
Fox Navigation says on it. Fox Navigation, that's probably a website for that. Oh, it's a beauty. It never moves. It's too bad.
So the idea for this gathering today in my head and with the folks at Electrifying Times, a lot of people that didn't make it, and so it's the same way. I get 40 calls all week saying, I'm coming. But if we can create some kind of group that is going to actively start to continue seeking and searching for all these little tidbits of information, put them all together, and maybe through the Connecticut Technology Council, when Michael is here, I'm sure he'll be able to tell us a few words about his own organization, be able to step this up and make further and further presentations in who we feel should be notified of this. I've contacted people at GE, I've contacted people at Duracell, blew me off for the most part. There was even an article in one of the local Mystic papers where they themselves in turn went and called Duracell and said, are you planning? And all Duracell really cares about is making a battery that you're going to throw away. And, they have to be brought kicking and screaming to actually make rechargeable batteries that are used now in cameras and in cell phones, etc. They're totally beyond the apex. And you just can't keep buying up the companies that are doing it right and stopping them from doing it right. And it's eventually there has to be a point of no return. And if we are going to save the planet, and if we are going to basically do the work that we need to do to restore our balance technologically with the rest of the environment, these things, there has to be a point where you split within corporate 500 world, where if I say, no, I'm not going to do this anymore, we need to do it that way. And there's a lot of that going on in companies right now. There's a lot of socially conscious investing going on. There's a lot of green marketing strategies. There's a lot of, you can see it every day. So this is kind of like the next step. Go ahead. Yes.
What you're saying is all very good, and I agree, but you brought up a point there. Very Excel likes to make these throwaway batteries rather than the rechargeable ones. How can we put our heads together and find a way to make it profitable for these companies? Because the bottom line is always money for them. But the environment is also important. Of course, you can't put a price tag on it. But we need to be able to address these companies in such a way that we're making it attractive for them to be able to embrace this type of thing.
If we can... Specifically about Duracell, there's two things going on. There's a lot of smaller independent companies that are making rechargeables that are starting to have a very, very valid growing business because they're dealing directly with cell phone companies and with whatever. Mm-hmm. And what's been going on is that the big fish is swallowing up the little fish. So Duracell just bought Varta. Varta was actually the company that I had worked with where we brought the nickel metal hydride patent from Kasuluszynski and brought it to Varta. And Varta is the first one that actually made the first commercially available cell and introduced it in the market. Varta is a German company. And, you know, all, over time, Duracell bought Varta. What's Varta doing now? I don't know. So that's one thing that needs to stop. There needs to be a stop in terms of the way these megacorps are spending their budget to swallow the innovative companies and squelch them. So these innovative companies need to have an alternative source of funding so that they can grow, so that they don't have to sell out and basically be made, rendered inefficient in a state of inertia. That's one. Two is that there's the technologies are there. And again, it's to create new means of raising venture capital that is not going to be swallowed up. And it's
politics.
You have to be conscious of where you're going with this. And Duracell, they have their headquarters right here in Bethel. It's a process of infiltration. This is where environmental activism comes about. If you remember the movie China Syndrome, anybody saw China Syndrome a long time ago? What's the first thing that the reporters went and did? They went and started hanging out in the bar where all the workers used to go. Okay. I don't know if Duracell is really like that because it's high up on a mountain. It looks like a medieval castle, and I'm sure once they go home, they split about wherever. But it happens one-on-one. You have to basically start to deal with people who work with the company. If you might know another, it's like the 6 degrees of separation.
Right.
You know, if you find somebody that works at the company, you talk to them, you tell them what's going on, etc. It's a process of infiltration. You have to look at it like a big castle up on the hill, and we're the peasants, and we have the pitchfork.
One point Mike can ask, right here in Boston, outside of Boston, a very innovative outfit, Selectria, I'm sure you've heard of it. They built an electric car 10 years ago or so. They ran it from Boston to New York on one charge.
They had the world record for the longest
electric car with a nickel iron halide battery. And the car sits in Selectria's shop with a tarp over it with no money.
Yeah. Selectria now is only building parts.
Military stuff. They managed to keep the doors open, which is more than most electric car outfits do. But somebody like perhaps the Pequot Nation or something could put the bucks up to get this car in production. He was going to have the bodies made in Rhode Island, outfit in Rhode Island. That's the last I heard. That was a few years ago. They're fiberglass.
We have a viable electric car company here in Connecticut called Cartwright. They were going to bring their people mover, and they got stuck halfway up the coast in Florida because they only have a few. They were going into production and they were going to have one here. It didn't happen. We have it on the website. They make golf carts.
Yeah.
But they're all built here. You know, they get their parts from different parts of the country and assemble it here. And obviously they're very interested in having better components because the better the battery is, the better the motors are. So the longer and the farther these vehicles will go, the less often you'll have to recharge them. There's a whole culture developing around electric vehicles in Florida. With gated communities. People just get in their golf carts and they decorate them. They're like all custom hot rods.
Yeah.
And they go shopping and they go to the golf course. And and it's starting new drive-ins. I even saw somewhere they're starting new drive-ins just for golf carts. There's a school in Georgia, a high school, where there was no more room for the kids to park. So one kid decided to drive to school in a golf cart. Now every single student in that school, 250 of them, drive to school in the golf cart. Same parking space, they can put four golf carts.
Yeah.
So it's a change of culture.
Only twist on it, no smoking area.
I mean, I think it's Honda that makes an electric car and gasoline car. How is that coming? Is that a good idea? What's your comments on that?
It's an interim idea.
Yeah,
back, and some of you have already heard the story because I've written about it often enough. I went to a TopTech. TopTech is a gathering of engineers that was held in LaGuardia when the Prius was about to be introduced in America. And the Japanese designers who had actually developed the drivetrain for the Prius were there. Mm-hmm. And so were representatives for Exxon.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at the lunch table just like this one, and we had the two fat guys from Exxon, and it was big. And we had the Japanese team that came, and the head of the Japanese team extended his hand to the two Exxon guys who stood up, and he said, "I hope with the Prius we're meeting you halfway."
Yeah.
And knowing the guys from Toyota and them being our major advertisers, they wouldn't be electrifying times if it wasn't for the checks that we get from Toyota, is that to them, in their own mind now, really, their dream is to be able to do away with the internal combustion engine.
Mm.
And they know that they can. They have the technology. They know how to do it.
Mm.
The problem is that they have to drive on our highways. You know, they have to make a lot of concessions and a lot of deals to be able to sell their automobiles in the USA.
Mm.
In 1984, Honda introduced the CRX, which had a little something to do with the design. That's a whole other story. And they came to this country with two models. They had a 1.5cc engine, and they had a 1.3cc engine. The 1.3cc did 68 miles to the gallon.
Mm.
That was in 84.
Mm.
And that's when Detroit totally lost it. They completely freaked out.
Mm.
And they sat down Honda and they said, look, if you're going to sell cars in the U.S., you've got to play by our rules.
Mm.
You have to play the game.
Yeah.
And Honda went, okay.
Mm.
And they sent back to Japan all the 1.3 engines. And they only kept in the U.S. the 1.5. I ended up buying one, and I had a CRX 1.5 for 14 years, which I drove around, which still did 55 miles to the gallon.
Yeah,
and I could go down to Florida and back for $60 worth of gas, and I could go 95 miles an hour in that.
Mm.
I'm lucky and so a lot. And I put mag wheels on it, and everybody told me my car looked like a shrunken Firebird. Something happened that said, you know, the reaction on the part of Detroit. You'll get Michael Moore, who comes from Flint, Michigan. Has he ever once in any of the documentaries that you've ever seen him talk about mentioned alternative cars and electric cars and hybrids? Isn't that strange?
Yeah, he doesn't.
Okay. How is it now? Who said it's not? Why isn't it?
Because it's very typical of a lot of the people who are the mainstream voices on the left that are considered the sort of spokespeople for the left. That aren't really, in my opinion. You know, I think they're out there and they're saying, they're shutting, they're getting all the attention, and they're not really saying anything.
Well, maybe the reason they're shutting down all these plants is because those cars aren't selling. Why aren't they selling? Because people want to buy Japanese cars. Why do people want to buy Japanese cars? Because they're more fuel efficient, they're built better.
Yeah.
Yes.
Have you been in contact with the Molina Carbonation because I toured their facility last year?
Norman Richards. Norman Richards. Promised me he'd be here today, and he's not. And
so they have a pretty impressive program.
Yep.
It's very progressive.
And
I'm from the ECG
Quartet Foundation.
I'm looking
for. If you saw on the table, Norman and I worked on a story which is in the new issue of Echo Structure Magazine. You take that flyer, and you fill it out, and you fax it, they'll send you the issue. It's all about the Mulligan Sons on the cover, and also this facility has a green roof, by the way, for those of you who didn't know. There is a lot of special. It's for Norman to do what he's done at the Mohegan Sun. It's always been after the fact. It's always been touch-up. it's never been built and integrated into, you know, the development from the start. He's had to fight every inch of the way to achieve what he's done. And now, what he's accomplished is becoming the major bastion marketing headlight for the whole hotel. Mm-hmm. So hopefully the next time they do something, they'll put Norman up front, not in the back seat.
I don't know whether he was available initially when they first started.
He wanted, initially, actually, he worked for the Foxwoods. He was the high-back guy for the Foxwoods. And they wouldn't let him do what he wanted to do, so he quit. And he went over to Mohegan and said, will you hire me? And they said, yes. Will you let me do this and that and the other thing? And they said, yes. And that's how he ended up working over there. Hmm. Yeah. Terrific guy.
Yeah.
Just to get back to Ed's point about the hybrid, the thing you should look for is what they, I don't know if you've heard of plug-in hybrid, is where they actually will allow you to charge the batteries at home in a hybrid and run the car for a certain period of time just on batteries.
The models in Japan are that way. And yeah. if you look at the Prius today, there is a switch which isn't working.
It's not quite there yet.
But in Japan it is. Yeah. You can buy a plug-in hybrid in Japan. Basically, if you want to run on nothing but the on the battery with the Prius and run the battery down, you can do that and then plug it in later.
And
they won't allow you to do this in this
most
country.
People
are just coal over burn to charge up your car.
Well, that's another issue. But what it does is it addresses the needs of most people. It allows you to go to work every day during the week on your 20-mile commute with absolutely no gasoline. And then on the weekend, you want to go skiing in Vermont, fill up the tank, and you can do that. It gives you the range. But once you get into the issue of, well, is it, you know, gasoline versus electricity, which is more pollution, that's a whole other issue. But electricity is still going to be better for you than running the gas. It's just a whole additional issue.
Yeah. I have a question. I don't know if you know about the legality of this, but in Europe, they have cars that have two containers for fuel. They have underneath the car, they have for natural gas,
mm-hmm.
and then they also have the petrol tank. And I don't know why I don't see this in the States. You can actually in Europe go and you buy your car and you go to some place like a garage and you can get this feature added in and you simply flip the switch while you're in the car if you're running out of gas on a long
trip. Did you know that in Europe, 2 out of every 3 cars is actually a diesel?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason diesel was popular in Europe is because diesel was cheaper. It was cheaper because there was less of a demand. It was a fuel that was considered dirty. It was a fuel that was only used by trucks. It was used by cabs.
Mm-hmm.
And then bit by the companies like BMW and Chrysler, Mercedes, started making them more efficient and better. They don't detune as often. It's very expensive to tune a diesel engine if it goes out of tune. So now, actually, the price of diesel in Europe is just about the same price as gasoline. So the advantage of buying diesel is just non-existent. But the advantage of having a diesel engine is that you could run it on biodiesel. You can basically run it on just about anything that you like. And I think diesel would be more
well,
better than
hydrogen. You can make it. We're going to start 2 plants in Connecticut, the first in the Northeast. If you use the recycled stuff, you can make it for 70 cents a gallon. Go to your McDonald's. I mean, a lot of these places are charging to take away this stuff. And they dump it into farms and mix it with bread, and they make more nasty products. We're going to be starting it. There's a couple of websites.
What's the country singer that's sick time into it now?
Willie Nelson is in the Midwest. There's a lot of biodiesel.
He's running all his buses. He wants every other country star that has a touring bus to run it on biodiesel.
Julia Butterfly Hill is touring with her biodiesel bus now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is there any possibility, because the government lies and lies and lies, we all know it, so they say 220 now. 2020, that this oil peak thing. Is there any possibility that it really could be 2010?
In terms of peaking?
Yeah.
I don't think we're ever going to run out of oil.
Well,
I don't even think it's an issue.
Then some people think it's already peaked.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Some people think it's already peaked. That whole energy meeting that they changed won't allow to become public.
I think there's always going to be ways.
But you're going to run out of oil.
Sooner than we're running.
Americans in Canada.
So much of a side issue because regardless, we can't keep spewing this stuff into the atmosphere.
Yeah,
it's the issue that's driving the economic energy. But it's not driving the environmental motive.
The immediate problem.
So it could be 20
years.
All the fossil fuels are all going to have a carbon issue, and that's good.
Besides the methanol, which doesn't.
Well, yeah, but that's renewable. You're taking the carbon out of the ground, using it.
You can also make ethanol out of coal, which is what the Germans were doing before the war, before we bombed all their plants. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'd just like to point out to everybody, the thickness of paint on this bowl, that's our atmosphere. That's it. Imagine the depth of space out there. All our children and grandchildren, that's it. The thickness of paint and this insane burning pollution that's going on.
That's the whole point.
We don't do it
because it's the right thing to do. That's it. End of story. I think the Netherlands got crazy about it and got up in these corporate presidents' faces and just demanded that they do the right thing. Mm. Just by the thousands, like we did in the 60s, by the hundreds of thousands, take back the freaking planet, our planet, and these monsters that are gobbling up Mother here have got to be stopped. And we can't do it just one of us.
It's not about pollution control. It's about doing away with pollution altogether.
Stopping
of changing the technology. And we have the technology with what we know about electricity. Let's go back for a second. I live in Norwalk, Connecticut, actually in Western Connecticut. But there was a library in Norwalk for many, many, many years called the Burnby. And Burnby was a guy who basically made his fortune making electrical switches. And when he passed away, instead of trying to keep the library in Norwalk, and I'll tell you what the library is in a minute, they packed it all up, and they took it to MIT. So now the Burnby Library Collection is at MIT. Mm-hmm. Burnby is probably the largest collection of original writings from all the pioneers of electricity. Mm-hmm. At the turn of the 5th century, people like Nikola Tesla, like Faraday, like name a few. Edison, Benjamin Franklin, Marconi, etc. It's all their original writings, and even way back. And the underlying thread of what you read when you read these original scripts, and, you know, their letters, etc. There is no distinction and no difference between electricity as a force, a motor force, and a life force. Basically, the force that, you know, makes all of us, our bodies, our spirituality, you know, I think Ed might touch that on his new book because we talked a lot about this. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like a separation that took place over the years in engineering of just using electricity as some kind of mathematical formula on a blackboard that is totally devoid of any consequences or any, and it's not the case. If there's electromagnetic radiation in the air because of radio stations and TV stations, etc., this is our own makeup. This is what all life is made of. Mm. And I think if we can once again bring back the sort of connection with electricity and life, and there's another museum in Minneapolis, Minnesota, it's called the Bakken Museum, and it's a very similar collection. It was started by the folks from Medtronic who developed the artificial heart. And to develop the artificial heart, they needed to know everything that they needed that they could about the electricity in the human body, because that's how the heart gets pumped. It's from electrical signals that make the heart go boom, 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 boom. And so they developed so these are the two libraries in America. You have the Burnby Library and the Bakken Library, and both of them are about electricity in life, electricity in the human being, electricity in animals, and electricity in engineering and in mathematics and every other field. And because of the work that's now being done at MIT with this new division and what they've said about we need to put new energies and new efforts into pure 100% battery storage and start focusing there again instead of, you know, let's go from instead of hydrogen, it's like why move the whole molecule? It, all you need to do is to move the electron. And why use hydrogen fuel if you can store the electricity? Because all you're doing is using hydrogen to make electricity. So why not just store the electricity? It's the same with battery storage. Why use a fuel cell and have a chemical storage and a chemical on a substrate if the substrate itself can store the electricity? We now have aerogel components which are making capacitors which are quantum leaps more efficient than anything that was produced, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. That company is here. It's in Connecticut. It's called Aerogel Composites. Except they're making little capacitors. So I had a meeting for 2 hours with one of the CEOs, and they still have yet no plan of scaling it up to make a battery pack that will be able to take an automobile riding around, because the incentive's not there. Hopefully the incentives can come from the military, because they want it for their helicopters and their jeeps and whatever.
Yeah.
I'm thinking the next step for me after this is I got a call from MIT finally yesterday. You know, at the last minute, apologizing for this professor not coming here, and I've suggested to them that we should have an electric conference, a conference about electricity. They're trying to bring it back down to its really root source and do it at the Burnaby Library at MIT. If anybody wants to help me do that, that's going to be my next project. That's probably going to take a year.
It's funny you mentioned military applications. They have already designed a vehicle to replace the Humvee, but they've done it with lightweight materials and partial electric drive, so that they can send this vehicle out, go in the field, travel in stealth mode.
No heat signature.
And
I drove the hybrid Hummer. I drove it in 1997. Mm-hmm. So we have pictures of it on our website, electric.
But this blew away everything the current vehicle could do. But it was lightweight materials, was using the electronics and the battery. All that things are important to that. And too bad you couldn't.
In the meantime, the ones that they're shipping out, they don't even have proper armor. So it's like they have all these prototypes that are great, but there's no incentives to actually go into mass production the way they might be for helicopters or jets, because it is an automobile and because it's kind of conflict with Chrysler and Ford and General Motors. And these are the lines that we need to step in.
Mm-hmm.
You saw the movie Preston Tucker, The Man in His Dream.
Mm-hmm.
That was 60 years ago, but still holds true today. Bring you to tears what Preston went through for that car.
It's interesting, the Nikola Tesla Museum in Belgrade study. If you go in this museum, it's got all the kind of remnants of the work that he did. And I found it interesting, at the end of the museum, they turn on this machine, and there happened to be a school group in placement there, and they handed out these fluorescent bulbs. So they turn on this machine in the center of the room, and the kids are told to stand back, and they're holding the bulbs. When they turn on, they shut the lights off, and all the bulbs glow.
Mm-hmm.
They create this machine that kind of sends energy out, you know, in a perimeter of the machine. But he's also working on something that was able to control electricity from the atmosphere and center it in a place that you would not need to have all these wires, you know, hooking up everything all over the place. And that was the last project he was working on in America. He was funded by the government. So I think really we need to address issues of politics.
About the fluorescent bulb.
Mm-hmm.
If you take a fluorescent tube, there's none here. If you take a fluorescent tube that's not plugged in, and you bring this fluorescent tube up to the one that's plugged in, that will start to light up. Do that too. You can stand on any high tension wires, and you can make your fluorescent bulb.
Only 13 feet away, though.
Yeah.
I didn't bring up my talk. I just wanted to bring up now. Bill Moyers, hopefully you've all heard about Bill Moyers and the talk he gave at the Harvard Med School. Anybody here has not heard that, what he said at the Harvard Med School?
From PBS?
Okay. Well, anyway, he simply came out and said, our biggest opponent, and this is how I got out of it, is the right wing.
Mm-hmm.
The right wing believes zealously that this thing going on in Iraq, which is tremendous waste of everything, our resources, is fulfilling biblical prophecy.
Mm.
Israel is part of that prophecy.
Mm.
And that the plight of the earth, the four horses of the apocalypse, is all part of prophecy. And that they feel no qualms about it. They have no desire to get excited at all about heating the planet. The major reasons, there are factors that are happening right now. He came right out, laid it out there, and this, you're going to have to keep always in the back of your mind, that is the biggest powerful force we have in the nation. And they have some idiots that actually think Jesus is going to draw the moon nigh. I guess some will have some big straw that goes out into it. But some miracle that their concept of God is going to save them from all of this, what we are imagining in our heads, that with the tremendous Holocaust, or in a way, the environmental Holocaust, which it will be.
There's a lot of fundamentalist Christians who basically have no notion of the seventh generation.
Yeah.
They think it's all going to go to shit, and they're all going to be lifted through the rapture. And sadly, this is becoming a predominant force in fundamentalist Christianity in this country. You can read the transcript of this show on the PBS website if it's still there. Otherwise, I have it.
Don't worry.
I'm voted for Bush.
I'm interested relative to your experience with some of the history of the ghost church.
Well,
it's really interesting to parallel with what people strongly believe and how the world is going to.
Woke is a nut, and Kicking Bear and Shortbow Alert, they're three nuts. And they're squirrels. And when you get into this prophecy stuff, I mean, I'm just not into that stuff. I mean,
you guys can take it up later. This is off topic. Let's refocus. I'd like Michael, since he's here, and he's going to have to go pretty soon because he's going to go for one of the kids at the game. If you can tell the people here about the organization and what you think that the Connecticut Technology Council do to bring something like that about.
Let me start by telling you who we are. We're at the Statewide Business Association for Technology Companies. And most of our companies a good number of them are larger companies. Some of the large companies will probably have interest that's on contrary to some of the things we're thinking about today and talking about today. But a lot of our companies are smaller companies that are made up of entrepreneurs. And I think those are the kinds of people who come up with the new ideas, the new energy, the new creativity, to come up with the things that you are talking about. Batteries, efficient batteries, and just capacitors. I'm not familiar with the terms, but what our organization could do is support entrepreneurs like yours that come up with these ideas and give them the money, perhaps, through some funds that we're trying to create and get from state government to give to energetic, creative types that you're trying to support and network through these kinds of meetings right here. So that's where I see us fitting in, perhaps, with what you're trying to do here.
It's hard to bring a lot of these companies that are working on these topics. I'll give an example, Enphase, which is in Norway. Enphase has been making military batteries for a long, long, long time. And last year they released a major press release that they had like this ultimate lithium ion, major improvement, major efficiency. They came and set up a whole booth at the Norway Community College when there was a military procurement to that. And then when I try to get somebody here from there, as a matter of fact, I have a friend who works for the company. What they're only attached to is that, oh, we're just making lead acid. It's like all of a sudden they huddle back. They make this sort of announcement that they send out to sort of make feelers, and then they basically, they'll go where the money is. And if the money's in Korea, if the money's in China, if the money's in Japan, that's where they're going to go. They don't pledge any allegiance or any patriotic. It's all gone. They have no, you know, so for something like the Connecticut Technology Council that wants to keep manufacturing and opportunities in the state, how do you get a company like that to basically think at home and not go off and sell it off?
Yeah. One of the things we're trying to do is create with our team or our website, www.cc.org. Our mantra, our theme is creating a culture of innovation. Creating a culture of innovation starts with supporting entrepreneurs, as I just mentioned. Creating networks where people can get together, share ideas, share technology. Part of our effort is aimed at getting state government, the governor, or her commissioners to invest more in the technology infrastructure so that you can create funds for lending out money to entrepreneurs. We can create curriculum in high schools and in the lower grades that stimulate the interest in science and technology, you talked about there being technology already existing on the shelves that go unfunded, unsupported, uninspired because there's nobody there to take that technology off the shelf and bring it out for commercialization. We're all supporting those things at our organization. We're behind those kinds of efforts. What it takes, I think we're discussing like this, it takes the governor recognize and elected officials recognize that they need to support the individual entrepreneur, the initiatives that you guys are pushing. So I think you got to keep working at
it. Oh, yeah.
You're not your head against the wall, like I'm obviously, I understand that, but you can't relax.
It's not so much against, it's we need, this is like the start of the continuation of the scavenger hunt. What Electrifying Times magazine is a scavenger hunt. The magazine itself is just a front for, you know, a dozen or more people that are behind the magazine. But the magazine is like, we do it like this for sure to just get it out there. But it's everybody else that's involved. It's basically the National Electric Car, the Drag Racing Association. They're racing electric cars, drag racers. We were getting very close about 3 or 4 years ago from actually beating Nitrous Oxide drag races. And suddenly, the people that were making the batteries and the capacitors that were required to launch these vehicles at such high speed became unavailable.
Yeah.
You know, it's just these companies just shut down. So it brought, you know, there was big publicity. And Wired magazine did a whole article about electric drag racing. The magazine in England, also Top Gear, which is one of the top automakers. So it got a lot of attention. And then all of a sudden, somebody freaked out somewhere, and poof, these small little companies that were making really crispy batteries that enabled, you know, to basically launch these things very quickly. And electric automobiles have something called instant torque, meaning that the moment the electricity goes to the wheels, that's it, it's gone. And it's in Connecticut, we have, for example, there's an idea that I'm pushing along, we have Lime Rock, which is a beautiful racetrack. It's settled in the middle of the valley. If you've never been, it's gorgeous. It's like a field. And these automobiles just go round and round. Except these automobiles make a lot of noise. And there happens to be a parish right there that's been there forever. So since Lime Rock's been established 40 years ago, they have a signed agreement. You're all through?
I'm sorry, I've got to go and I've got
you to come down.
Well, that's all of you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll be in touch.
Okay. Bye. Bye.
And on Sundays they have electric, they have bicycle races because it doesn't make any noise.
Yeah.
So they still have the crowd. So I brought that idea to a few people. I have made friends with the guy who actually did the documentary of Lime Rock, which was aired on PBS 3 years ago, and he's totally into it. He lives on Nantucket. He's into electric cars, and we're trying to bring this idea to Lime Rock. Mohegan's son is one of the backers of a few of the races up at Lime Rock, and I've been trying to find the person that Mohegan's son is in charge of the connection between Mohegan's son and Lime Rock, if I could just have that one interview. And we could maybe sponsor electric racing. There's a Michelin Challenge, which brings about like hundreds of electric and hybrids and alternative fuel automobiles together in different places around the country to showcase the journey. Yeah. That could happen at Lime Rock like that. Mm. We could do that in Cuba. Yes, of course.
It's focusing in New York area. They'll be up there focused.
Yep. Which is where the Celestia one is, you know, distance record with a battery pack that was actually given against General Motors' will to Celestia by Chancellor Ushinsky. Because General Motors never wanted to do nickel metal hydride. They did it sort of to keep everybody else from doing it. And the reason we have nickel metal hydride batteries and hybrids today is because Panasonic stole the technology from Bharat. And General Motors with GM Ovonics actually took Panasonic to court for 6 years trying to keep them from making them instead of developing themselves a better mousetrap.
Do you have a card before you go? Let me down here.
Texaco bought them out. Moshinsky, Ovonics.
Yep. But then somebody else bought that out. It keeps changing hands because even though it is Sanford Oshinsky's patent and they have this facility, they're not making them. They're not really cranking them out. The people doing that is the Japanese.
Is the Japanese part owner of
ECB
energy components? Mr. Oshinsky's latest thing is hydrogen storage in pellets and utilizing hydrogen directly in the internal combustion engine as an intermediate point. Do you know more about that?
I think an interesting point in the whole discussion is that the U.S. is able actually to be the first country, so to speak, to develop a viable and something that can mass-produce solutions to the energy problem we're facing worldwide, because every country has the problem, and certainly some of the northern countries that have oil right underneath them, that it would put us back in the economic lead in the world without question. Whereas right now, it is in question, you know, compared to the EU that's growing. China, which is a very competitive economic system as well. And I think that the sooner we can find the solution, the better. I believe that the technologies are out there, but it needs to be developed further, I guess, and marketable. That's kind of like, you know, there was the car before Ford made the assembly line, made the car available to everyone.
How would you need to put it off here? There's got to be an end to the scavenger hunt. It has to be a research and development lab somewhere. That's why I'm hoping that even the Pequots would do it on the reservation.
Okay, to that. Well, the Indians, they, you know, they're very, very spiritual. And but a lot of it, they just worry at it. And in science, they're a little weak in science, but they respect science. I think just by doing what you're doing now, is you're making them aware. And they're aware that you're here with us today. And I think that this initial tapping on doors, if you stick with it, and I think that they can see where they can help out, because spiritually, they know it's a good thing. Mm. And then they're very, that's their religion. You're tapping into an area that is really deep to them. So I think that you don't give up. I think if, and especially they become more and more aware, just like this man that you're talking about, I think you could very possibly make headway, and boom, you get yourself a tremendous mother load there to really give you a hand.
Mm. And you know, the other thing is we're not trying to develop a warp drive for the ESS Enterprise. We're trying to take existing technologies that really seem to be brought together, things that people already know about, that can be brought together and can make major advances. They're just hidden in closets or squirreled away somewhere.
All factory floor stuff.
Do
lithium ion batteries and nickel metal batteries have the capacity of lead acid batteries?
Oh yes, absolutely. They blow lead acid away from every single point. It's just more money.
The heavy loads that are lead acid batteries.
It's just because there are economic factors that keep these technologies less affordable. There is a huge lead acid consortium. All the battery associations are owned by people, you know, selling lead acid. They are in every automobile. Every car has a 12-volt battery. Now, this is quickly changing in Europe again, especially in Germany, where now all the new Mercedes and all the new BMWs have fall all intents and purposes virtual hybrids, because they all now have 42 volts. It enables the car to stop at a complete stop at a red light with the engine shutting off. And because you have 42 volts in the battery pack, the moment when you put on the accelerator, it turns over the engine rapidly enough to start it up right away so you don't lose any gunning. Mm-hmm. So every new BMW, every new Mercedes is almost like a hybrid now because of that. Because it's a 42 volt battery, because it is bigger, it's heavier, it's bulkier, they need to reduce the weight. This is another incentive to start working on lighter components.
And you talk about lead acid lithium polymer. These are all different chemistries. And there are chemistries that aren't here, but that somebody figured out, well, we've got this density with this metal. When we change it to this metal, we have five times the density. Mm. A lot of things people have figured out on paper, but just needs to be,
A lot of it is in design. There is, as an example, Ultima. Ultima, this was 10 years ago. Realized that, they redesigned the lead acid battery. It's basically the same size, the same shape. The thing that they did that was different from the ones that we used to use is that instead of having slabs, they made these lead mesh that looked like these beehives, like a roll. And they put this sandwich between the mesh and the fiber that you use the liquid substrate on. And they roll them up. And these batteries are twice as efficient simply because they changed the design. And then everybody started copying them, and now all the lead acid batteries you get on the market are all designed that way. Yeah. And it's the same now, especially with aerogel, especially with nanotubes, and because we can start to work really at the molecular level, and we can create we can create a molecule that has an inordinate amount of the capacity to hold charge, like the, you know, those who heard of the Buckminster-Fuller's fullerene.
Buckyballs.
Yes, exactly. The solid-state batteries you can make out of buckyballs is just, it's mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's already tested in a lab. We know it works. It's mm-hmm. just a question of going out there and making it.
There's another technology where you talk about lead acid, you talk about these things, that the electrolyte between the two metal plates is a gel or a liquid. Well, there's a technology where it's actually, I don't want to say a solid, but it's a layer, solid layer. And also you dramatic increases in the flow of electrons, just that technology alone to generate improvement. It's proven, but nobody's developing it.
No moving parts, there's no chemicals, there's no liquids, it's all solid state, just like your radio. It's really going from the vacuum tube to the transistor, and we have the capacity to do this now with battery technology.
It takes money.
It takes money.
And overriding politics is just the whole problem here. We'll get back down to square one.
And the driving factor is the cell phone industry right now and the TGAs. And I'm working with a company called Port Nexus, which is in Greenwich, which is at the forefront of that industry.
That's why I asked if cell phones are not a big load.
But cell phones also, people are used to plugging in every day, using it and plugging in at night. And that's not a big thing to have to do. So what's the difference between that and your car? Plug your car in at night?
You have to use energy to be charged.
Well, cell phone, car, you charge it overnight when you're not using it.
And now with algorithmic charges, it takes 10 minutes to recharge a battery. You don't have to wait 8 hours.
What you have to look at with your new battery technology is, and where they're going, is they're trying to push the, and you throw the cell away when it's no longer useful to you. The state of Connecticut indicated that if you had a nickel cadmium battery in it, you had to be able to remove that battery from the appliance before the appliance would throw itself. And so there's a voluntary effort on the part of nickel cadmium battery makers to collect this material, because otherwise they're
toxic waste.
We need to do this with the alkaline battery industry.
You know,
homeowners need to understand that alkaline batteries belong in household hazardous waste, not the trash can.
But this becomes a business. You know about Batteries Plus. Batteries Plus is a chain all over the country. They have their first store right now in Norwalk, Connecticut. In Connecticut. Their first Connecticut store. And Batteries Plus sells nothing but batteries. But they do. And they will. There's no longer a toxic waste day where only once a year you can bring back your old batteries. Every day, 9 to 5, they will take your batteries. If you have batteries, you don't know what to do with them, you take them to Batteries Plus, they will recycle them. It's a closed cycle. They're creating an industry around simply batteries where everything becomes a closed loop mechanism. And they have like 300 stores right now around the country in California.
And some of these new battery technologies, instead of lead or cadmium, aluminum. There are aluminum batteries with very high density.
It's to do away with all the toxic components.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Non-toxic.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
The problem that I'm seeing here, though, with the consumer, in my mind, is that you're talking about plugging something in, but you still have to produce the energy.
Yeah, that is really, that's a side issue. It is the, you know, there is an issue, but it's not the issue of this particular thing that I'm, you know, it's nuclear versus, you know, wind and versus solar and versus alcohol fuels and versus all these things. And granted,
maybe you're taking pollution off the roads from the cars, but you're still producing, and maybe more so.
A lot less. Because if you produce a lot at the source,
right,
you reduce pollution to a massive.
And
because you maximize efficiency at the production.
And a power plant technology can be much cleaner than an average car.
But the power
plant can
operate 24/7 at the same level. So that's one reason they are very supportive of something like fuel cells or something that involves use my energy at night instead of competing with the manufacturing base, because they can keep that plant ramped up at a higher capacity so it's more efficient. So they're excited about ways for people to use the electricity at night.
There's more and more large-scale fuel cells, what we call standalone units, that produce like 100,000 watts of electricity continuously. And these are actually, a lot of them are made in Windsor Lock.
Right.
And they were an offshoot of the space program.
Right.
And they're now used in hotels, they're used in corporate parks, they're used on ships. There's dozens of them scattered throughout Manhattan. You don't even know where they are, but you see a little vent somewhere. This is for like some of them are methanol powered, some of them are natural gas, some of them are hydrogen. they pollute very little, and then whatever's there, you recycle it. You know, it becomes like a closed, a cradle to cradle means of matter fact.
So this idea of battery technology for cars is to take the inefficiency away from the combustion engine.
It's to take the pollution out of the air in the cities and that we breathe. Such
right, and put it at a power plant level where it is more efficiently scrubbed.
Yeah. Good God, wind power and solar power could produce. They calculated that if 30% of all the roofs that are now suddenly orientated in America have the PVs that we are now using, which is like 23% efficiency, that would be enough to handle all of our needs. Because the grid is a complete thing. It goes, it flows from one to the other. It's like the internet. The electricity could be like the internet. It flows from one to the other.
Spain mandated all new construction has to have a certain percentage of their energy load covered by solar. So everything being built in Spain now is including a solar component.
Yeah, the solar PV company is rising very quickly.
Combine the two of them.
I'm sorry, Gail didn't stick around. Oh, you're here. Sorry. There was somebody else that wanted to meet you, and I thought she'd like to start.
Okay.
Because talk to us about solar PV, because you install this stuff.
It's not cheap. but people should do it because it's something that they think should be done. They shouldn't do it if this new incentive program is one which the state is essentially paying about half the cost of the capital equipment. So instead of it costing you $10,000 to throw 1,000 watts on your roof, it would only cost you $5,000. Very roughly. In the wisdom, the state still charges you state sales tax on the money that they give you. And there's some other issues that probably need to be sorted out.
Yeah, we won't get into those here, but you know,
it's exciting for me that Connecticut has finally caught up with its neighbors and doing something for the ratepayer who put into the fund, which is the source of the money that's being redistributed in this particular fashion. Solar electricity is more expensive than what we're getting from the power plant. That's not necessarily totally the cost. The reason of solar electricity has a lot to do with the subsidies that have been fed throughout history to the power plant.
Doesn't take into account environmental costs.
Environmental costs, the soldier costs, the vested interest and so forth, even distribution losses in the line. So the power company sees it in their own interest, if they're not going to lose as much, if they can get on board with distributed generation, whether it be solar or something else. You put it at the other end of the line, you can help deal with that shortage of electricity in southwestern Connecticut and not have to have as huge a wire that people argue about that are traveling from one place to the other. We're not there yet.
I'm sorry we don't have you in Westport, Connecticut, because this is where you should be giving this talk. The Westport public, yes, but they don't have... I know that people, they don't have your charm, but it's they haven't been able to really make that pitch. And the people don't get it.
Oh, I think we should just throw a switch and shut them off. We might sit in the dark long enough. But solar electricity is still an expensive way to go, but there are other renewables. Wind is very cost competitive, and you're going to see suddenly powers that be are very interested in wind because it's cheaper to produce with wind. I mean, we're down to 3 cents a watt. Which, your electric power plant, your nuclear plant is double that. That's one reason they're looking at other power sources. We want clean, so natural gas is one of the players in natural gas. You talk in alternative vehicles, you can have a hybrid vehicle that's not just electric gasoline. You can have hybrid with natural gas. PIL, PHIL, is a product which is being introduced so that your own natural gas line in your house could be the fueling source for your vehicle. There's a variety of possibilities that people say, I think this is important to do, I'm willing to be the pioneer and show that it can be done. So often I hear people say, well, solar thing, I heard about that 20 years ago, it must not work because I don't see it. And they totally disconnect from the fact that the reason they don't see it is because everybody's waiting for somebody else to do it. If something is going to change, it's because somebody says, "Ooh, stop waiting for Washington, just do it."
Sorry. I got to go to the business office at 4 o'clock. So
to where?
I got to go to the business office before 4.
Okay. All right, is he coming right back?
Yeah, the thing where the place is, I'm very going.
Okay. Huh?
Okay. I'm going to have to take my car.
Huh? Michael, thanks for coming.
Just as a side note, there's some people on an ED list that live in Florida, and Florida got hit by hurricanes, and people without electricity for days. Some people were taking their electric car battery pack, reversing it, and running their electricity in their house for 3 or 4 days at a time. Before the electricity came back, they still had electricity reversing the battery pack.
Let me, as an example, they built, they in Connecticut, and you might be able to answer this issue. I attended the grand opening of the PV array that they set up at the Stanford Recycling Station. And when I went there, I noticed that the fire department had their training tower right next door. So I went, and I climbed up the tower so I could take pictures of the array, which is the picture I had on my website. So coming down, I started talking with that fire chief. And I said, well, look, in case there's a blackout or something, are you going to get to use the power coming from these panels so that you could run your emergency equipment? And nobody's been in touch with me, you know. So I put the bug in his ear. So I go back and I start to talk to the people who actually did the installation. And I ask them, and they say, oh, no, if the power goes out, the array goes out. And I'm going, well, what's the point?
Yeah, you need that.
No, if the electricity goes out, it wasn't set up to basically
control
stuff. No, it's not designed in order for the utility to buy into the process of letting solar electric electrons come onto the grid. It had to be proved that there's no possible way that one of their linemen could be fast. So the equipment that conditions it for the grid is designed so that it's always tasting that weird signal. And if that signal is gone, it knows to shut itself down. But that doesn't mean there's not ways to do it. And I specialize in folks who say, I want to have some backup power. It's just a slightly different inverter that you know about it ahead of time, and that's what you use when you build
the system. I brought this up with Nancy, who was the woman who was in charge, who was responsible for doing this, and I showed them the fire people next door, and said, oh my God, I never thought about this. Like all of a sudden, you know, it's like a ball
goes on.
You know, so I started something. But then everybody got on the defensive because, oh, we can't do this, it can't be done, you know, this goes on forever.
Battering naysayers of the negative.
No good deeds.
But every home generator, everybody that's got a generator in their house, has a gen-train switch to do that, to address that whole issue. That's as basic as any generator.
Most people don't have a generator big enough to run the neighborhood.
But that's about the Connecticut utilities really wanting to keep
control. They're not feeding back into the grid.
Yeah.
And that's the issue.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want to have it feeding into the grid when the grid was down.
It's really just as simple as incorporating something
Those of you who want to keep this going, myself and a few other friends, and I think Ed, we're all going to drive to Mystic. We don't know where yet. And we're going to find a place to have a hard tea and dinner. So you're welcome to join us.
Sounds like fun.
And if you want to stay in touch, everybody, like, give me your business cards, your contact information, anything that you have, and we'll just start putting all this on some kind of list and keep the ball moving.
Okay, website, maybe. I actually can't get my site started right then.
You will not be able to find what I'm doing.
You want to come down?
Actually, it's not anything to do with electricity. I know there's something I want to talk to you about, but I can't think of what it is.
I'm trying to get an EV.
Can I have your attention for 1 second? I know this is like a real cheap pitch, but we have a friend who's driving around a hydrogen van all around the country, and wherever he stops at the shows and conferences, he hands out Electrifying Times magazine for us, and he has his shirt. So that's $20, and it's all organic cotton, and it's printed with an environmental process that no longer uses sanitation. So if you want a t-shirt, they're $20, and they're really, really, really comfortable.
do it like you do right here. What I've heard is that between $5 a watt for an install array, so you got $1,000 more array, it could be back.